Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Yuval David, Israeli-American actor, director, social activist, featured in the upcoming TV series based on the Philip Roth novel, The Plot Against America. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and our new Shin Shinim, our young representatives of Israel, Shai Friedwall and Danielle Levy. Please email your comments to us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at 2JewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and 2Jewish.
Shalom. There has been altogether too much about Jews in the news the last couple of weeks, none of it particularly good. First, there was a crazy controversy over whether the Israeli government would decide to deny the ability of U.S. Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib and, to a lesser extent, Ilhan Omar to visit Israel. And then President Trump decided to very publicly state that any Jew who voted for the Democratic Party or its nominees is somehow disloyal. Mind you, it's not that I actually want to talk about either item, but I feel a responsibility to do so. So let's take each of these bizarre situations separately, although there is a connection. I'll explain it all. First, let me be clear. Rashida Tlaib, the freshman congresswoman from Michigan, is descended from Palestinian Arabs and is certainly opposed to Israel retaining authority in the West Bank, and is probably also opposed to Israel's very existence. Ilhan Omar, the freshman congresswoman from Minneapolis, is a U.S. citizen who was born in Somalia and who has said some very anti-Israel things. Both of them are political opponents of Israel, and I have criticized both of them strongly here on 2Jewish for their views and their statements, some of which have been anti-Semitic, particularly so in the case of Omar. But having said that, there is no intelligent reason for Israel to deny the visit of sitting U.S. Congresspeople, duly elected and serving members of the same House of Representatives that votes for financial and military allocations that go directly to Israel. It's incredibly short-sighted for Israel to do this. It has never done so before, not even under Bibi Netanyahu. In effect, this ban was publicly announced by Israel only after President Trump tweeted that it would be a sign of incredible weakness for Israel to allow them to visit. Israel is strong and successful enough to tolerate the visits of anti-Israel leaders of other countries, and it is democratic and open enough to allow them to say what they are going to say and just move on. There are people in the Knesset in Israel now who say the same things that Tlaib says, and they live in Israel and are quoted in the Israeli press, and it has not destroyed the country. To the contrary, one of the strongest things about Israel is its free and very diverse press. I agree completely with former Senator Joe Lieberman, a strong supporter of Israel and a strong supporter of President Trump's earlier actions and statements about Israel, and by the way, a past visitor here on 2Jewish. Joe Lieberman said, "It's a serious mistake because it's contrary to the values of the State of Israel, the values of the United States of America, which has been the underlying foundation of our relationship." He later added, that is Joe Lieberman, "They are duly elected members of Congress. I can disagree with them, as I do, but really it's disrespect for the Congress and the American political system for our ally to keep two members of Congress out of Israel." Lieberman called the decision a loss all around and said that it's most threatening to Israel's standing in the United States as a free democracy in the Middle East. I understand that Bibi Netanyahu is in a close and fairly desperate electoral race now, that he is deeply afraid of losing the prime ministership of Israel and then of perhaps being prosecuted for corruption immediately afterwards. In this challenging situation, he no doubt wants to appear strong and decisive to the Israeli electorate and preserve his close friendship with President Trump, who is actually more popular in Israel than Netanyahu is. And by the way, Trump is certainly more popular in Israel than he is here in America. But Israel has always been smart and strategic about making any inappropriate diplomatic moves. There have been other anti-Israel congressmen, senators, secretaries of state, and even to a degree, presidents in the past. Israelis hated James Baker, the oil man turned Secretary of State back in the early 1990s, and they firmly believed that George H.W. Bush, the Texas oil man who became president, was opposed to Israel and its policies. But Israelis were smart enough not to publicly attack them, or, for goodness sake, ban them from entering the country. There is little doubt that a trip to Israel and the Palestinian territories by Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar would have been an anti-Israel show. It would not have been the first such show, and it wouldn't have been a particularly big story. Unfortunately, goosed on by President Donald Trump, Netanyahu's government has chosen to make political martyrs out of these two, and the story has continued and grown very large indeed. It appears to be part of the president's partisan re-election strategy to make Tlaib and Omar, as well as Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Ayanna Pressley, all freshman congresswomen, into a kind of collective boogeyman as he runs for a second term. If he can, through his extensive manipulation of media, make these four into the face of the Democratic Party, well, then, President Trump believes that Americans and American Jews will turn away from the Democratic Party and vote for him and the Republicans. Which brings up the second crazy thing that happened in the past week or so about Jews. President Trump declared midweek that any Jew who votes for the Democratic Party candidates, or as he has taken to saying for no apparent reason, the Democrat Party, any Jew who votes for them is disloyal to the Jewish people and to Israel. The exact quote was, "I think any Jewish people that vote for a Democrat, I think it shows either a total lack of knowledge or great disloyalty." The next day, as the president habitually does when he says something very controversial that becomes a top story in the next 24-hour news cycle, he doubled down and amplified those remarks, saying, "If you vote for a Democrat, you're being disloyal to Jewish people, and you're being very disloyal to Israel." Wow. First, you have to understand that for decades, Jews in America have been attacked by anti-Semites and accused of being un-American because they had dual loyalty. That accusation argued that Jews couldn't be American patriots because they were supporters of Israel, or, before the state was founded, because they had loyalty to the invented Zionist conspiracies of the supposed Protocols of the Elders of Zion that anti-Semites created. When President Trump stated that Jews were being disloyal, he used a word long associated with virulent anti-Semitic organizations and pushed a painful button for many Jews. But he also, in two wild statements, undermined the careful hard work that has made support for Israel a strongly bipartisan issue that has united Democrats and Republicans behind Israel, the only true democracy in the Middle East, and a consistent and staunch ally of the United States under presidents of both parties. There is no doubt that this president believes anyone who doesn't vote for him is disloyal to something. America, at the least. Now he has made it clear that he thinks any Jew who votes for a Democrat is disloyal to his own people and to Israel, and I suppose not to be trusted. Mind you, this is far from the first president who has tried to get Jews to change their political allegiance, and yet, stubbornly, 70-80% of Jews continue to vote for Democratic presidential candidates. Hillary Clinton received 71% of the Jewish vote in 2016 to Trump's 24%, and the only time a Republican has been close to capturing a plurality of Jewish votes came when Ronald Reagan defeated Jimmy Carter back in 1980. Carter was widely viewed by Jews as pro-Palestinian and anti-Israel, and he still won more Jewish votes than Reagan. It's pretty obvious that the president is trying to create yet another wedge issue, in this case, try to force Jews to vote for him instead of yet again going for the Democratic Party nominee. He's doing it in an ugly, wrong, terrible way, and it brings up all kinds of awful stereotypes and slanders that can be turned against American Jews. Mostly, though, it's not going to work, but it will certainly leave a really bad taste. We hope and pray that it doesn't somehow motivate some crazy man with a gun to shoot up another gathering of innocents. To play us in this morning, on a much happier note, here's a Sephardic song called Felshara, a melody originally from Spain used as a setting for a Kabbalistic piyut for Shabbat. After the expulsion of the Jews from Spain in 1492, this song traveled all over Europe and the Mediterranean. Some ethnomusicologists say that the Sephardic lyrics of Felshara were actually written in the 16th or 17th century in some Italian harbor, because the song consists not only of a mix of several Jewish dialects like Volgare, Judeo-Italian, Juadit, Jewish French, and Ladino, Jewish Spanish, but also it has some English and some Berber. Here it is. That was Felshara, a beautiful Sephardic song of mystical connection to God. Our guest this morning, Yuval David, is an actor, activist, director, and committed social justice worker. Well, it might be Yuval David. We'll talk to him about that. Meet him when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun. A place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol. The best games in town. Amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball. Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
We are delighted to welcome the Too Jewish our guest this morning. Yuval David, or as they say in the American audience, Yuval David, is an actor, humanitarian, filmmaker, and activist. an Israeli-American TV, film, and Broadway actor who has been prominently featured on Broadway and on TV series, and will be in the HBO miniseries The Plot Against America. That's based, of course, on the Philip Roth novel. He's an advocate, speaker, and award-winning filmmaker who uses his platform as a vehicle for social change. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Thank you. My pleasure to be on Too Jewish.
So, you have done work for a variety of media. Do you like stage better? Do you like TV better? Film? What's your preference?
It's a really good question. I actually get asked that question regularly. My start was in theater, in live theater, and eventually that led to voiceovers, film, and television. And I regularly go back and forth between each of these mediums. I can't say I have one that's a favorite over the other. They're very different. There is an excitement of live theater, just because I get to interact with the audience right then and there. But when I do film and television, I'm thinking about the audience just as much in terms of how I am relaying a message, who the target audience is, and kind of just envisioning what their responses might be. The beauty of it all, of course, is just letting go and being true to my character or true to the narrative and hoping that the audience will go along on the journey.
You know, if they like what you're doing, it's probably a good thing in any medium. Tell us a little bit about how you integrate your social activism with your performing.
Well, I think it's an inherently Jewish thing, the concept of tikkun olam, right? We speak about it so much in different Jewish environments, and in Jewish education, we learn about that. And that's been part of my life since as early as I can remember. So for my work as an actor, TV host, and filmmaker, so much of the content that I create, especially when it's my own original content, has to do with society. There's something where it's a social commentary. So ultimately, if I can connect to an audience and take the audience, lead them on this journey towards a better place, to a better place, whatever that might mean for the specific content, ultimately, I get to use my art for social change. I get to use my creativity for tikkun olam, to make this world a better place.
Great goal for all of us. We'll talk much more with Yuval David when we come back here on Too Jewish, talking about his filmmaking and the causes he's been actively involved with. Congregation Beit Simcha, House of Joy, a new Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills, celebrates its first services, classes, and events this fall. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, back in October, Beit Simcha has created a vibrant community that strives every day to serve God with joy. A new progressive congregation in northwest Tucson in the foothills, Congregation Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Beit Simcha is located at 7315 North Oracle Road, just north of Ina on the west side of Oracle. Services, classes, and events are open to all. Join us this Friday night at 7315 North Oracle Road for Shabbat evening services at Beit Simcha at 6:30 p.m., Saturday morning Torah studies at 9 a.m., followed by Shabbat morning services at 10 a.m. Join us for Shabbat on the west side of Oracle, just north of Ina. For more information about Congregation Beit Simcha, to attend services, our great religious school, our Torah Tikes program, our confirmation program, Bar Bat Mitzvah, high school, all kinds of stuff, and our rich array of adult education academy courses, go to www.beitsimchatucson.org, BEITSIMCHA, tucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675, beitsimchatucson.org. Join us for the High Holy Days this year, coming up in a little more than a month, in the newest Jewish synagogue in southern Arizona and the fastest growing during its exciting first year. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit our website at 2JewishRadio.com. That's T-O-O Jewish Radio. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcast, Top 10 in America, according to Moment magazine. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We started talking last week about the former Yugoslavia and all of the different regions and now different nations that make up that area. The Jewish communities there, or maybe it's communities, I'm not even sure the right term, go back a good long way, but it's a very complicated mix too, isn't it?
Right. It's a mix which is a different story in each of the countries that emerged from the former Yugoslavia. The simplest way of looking at it is that, generally speaking, the countries further east were part of the Ottoman Empire until later in history. So in some cases, till the late 19th century or early 20th century, and there, the Sultan Bayezid, who was in charge when the Jews were expelled from Spain and settled Jews in cities that belonged to him. So there are cities in Macedonia, in southern Serbia, and in Bosnia, which were settled by Jews who came from Spain in the aftermath of 1492. And they basically saw the Ottomans as benevolent rulers, which was not the case for the local Christian communities. One of the places where you see the mixture, the southeast of the former Yugoslavia is largely Sephardic for this reason. There are a few people who came from Germany or Austria as traders or doctors or lawyers, but they're a minority. And the overall tone of those communities is Sephardic, but real Sephardic, not Edot HaMizrach, but people who came from Spain. In Belgrade, the community was very mixed. There are a lot of Austro-Hungarians. The frontier kept shifting. There's a modern-day suburb of Belgrade that's right across the river, which was the southeasternmost frontier city in the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And across the river, it was the Ottoman Empire. So Belgrade, if you go to the Jewish cemetery, you see names and photos of people wearing turbans, clearly Ottoman style, clearly adherents of the Sephardic tradition. But you also see names like Grunberg, Greenwald, whatever, Grunwald, which are clearly from Austro-Hungary or from Germany, and they settled in Belgrade or in the what's now a suburb of Belgrade right across the river, but they were buried in the same cemetery. So Serbia is a complicated mix. Bosnia, Macedonia, less so. Montenegro never had a lot of Jews. It had a few tiny communities, I think. Croatia had bigger communities, but again, of two very different natures. The coastal towns had communities left over from when they were part of the Venetian Empire.
Venice, right.
And the inland communities had largely Austro-Hungarian Jewish communities in places like Zagreb, whatever. Slovenia, I don't know that it ever had a big Jewish community, but it certainly had some presence as well. And there's also a very interesting autonomous region in the north of Serbia between Belgrade and the Hungarian border that is called the Vojvodina, where the language of at least the peasants and most of the Jews used to be Hungarian. And even some smaller cities in that region have sizable Jewish communities, very impressive former synagogues, which are no longer used because the communities have shrunk. But they still exist. They still have minyans and occasionally a wedding or a bar mitzvah, so not to be written off.
Interesting. It's a very interesting, complicated Jewish community, and I think quite fascinating. Tom, thanks so much.
You're very welcome.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by 2Jewish as a public service. Shlomo Shlomo goes to Dr. Goldberg for a checkup. After extensive tests, Dr. Goldberg says, "I'm afraid I have some terrible news for you, Shlomo. You have only 6 months to live." Shlomo is dumbstruck, composes himself for a moment, and then he replies, "That's terrible, doctor. But I must admit to you, I can't afford to pay your bill." "Okay," says Dr. Goldberg, "I'll give you a year to live." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. We welcome our pretty darn new Shinshinim, our young representatives of Israel, here with the Weintraub Israel Center, Danielle Levy and Shai Friedwald. Boker Tov.
Boker Tov.
Boker Tov.
So you guys have now been here a short time. What are your first impressions? You've lived elsewhere, Danielle, as mm-hmm. you said last time, Finland,
yes.
Germany. You know, this is a. But what are your first impressions, both of you, on meeting the Jewish community here in America? As someone who's going to be here for a year.
So we're actually really impressed because everyone has been welcoming us with open arms, and we feel like celebrities because everyone just, as they say, want a piece of us. They want to have us in their congregation, so we're like pretty full and booked out. So
that's good.
Yeah.
Like that. That's good.
It is exciting.
Keep you at hard at work.
Oh, yes, absolutely. So it's just really nice to being welcomed that way, and we're excited to be here the next year.
Good, good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Shai?
Yeah. For me, although they are Jewish, they are not Israeli. So it's
definitely
really
not. Mm-hmm. It's a cultural difference, isn't it?
180 degrees, the opposite side. But it's very exciting. And we look forward to meet all of the community and not just the Jewish one, and to live American life and to experience this amazing opportunity.
Yeah. It is an amazing opportunity. Tell us a little bit about your families that you left behind, because I know you both just graduated high school not long ago, right? And you'll go back in a year and you'll go into the Army. I assume that's pretty much the standard track, right?
Yes.
Tell us about the families you left behind a little bit.
So I'm actually, my mom forced me to talk to her every day.
Every day?
Every single day. And she stay awake for me till the,
because it's a 9 to 10 hour
yeah,
10 hours time difference.
Yeah,
and that's huge.
Yeah, yeah, so I need to say I love you, mom. I will talk to you every day. Yeah, it's hard, you know, friends and all your life you leave behind, but it's for just 1 year, and you grow up and you experience a lot of different things, and it's important.
Danielle, how about you?
So as Shai said, I feel like this year has so many more advantages than like bad things for it.
You have a family back
I
home.
I do
yes?
have a beautiful family at home.
Tell
I
us
have,
about your beautiful family.
I have a
Shai's
handsome...
Shai's mom makes you call every day.
Oh, yeah. So I'm still getting used to it. I have a handsome older brother. He just finished the military. He's 21. He'll probably work and go for his big trip and then to college.
Yeah, do they only send good-looking Shinshin? Seems like it to me, but
my mom is from Germany. I miss her every day. She's the funniest little mom. she's very entertaining. My dad is the most tzabar father you would ever meet. He has a white beard, looks like Eliyahu Navi.
Elijah the prophet.
Right? Exactly. And he's so calm and cute.
Well, he lives in that beautiful pastoral part of Israel.
Yes, we do.
Israel.
Exactly.
Right? Like they used to sing songs mm-hmm. about it.
Absolutely.
Because it's such green and...
Yes.
Well, I don't mean to make you guys think about the people you left behind. Obviously, you have a lot of exciting things ahead of you. But we will talk more about Israel and your experiences when we come back next week. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Behitraot. And now a word of Torah. We celebrate the new month of Elul next Sunday, beginning the final month of the Jewish year. It's time to think about the state of our relationships, to prepare to do a cheshbon ha-nefesh, an accounting of the state of our souls, to reflect on where we are in our lives, where we've been, and where we're headed. The opening lines of this week's Parsha Re'eh are famously about choice. In that passage, Moses says to us, the people, Re'eh anochi noten lifnechem hayom bracha uklala. See, I today give you a blessing and a curse. The blessing, if you listen to the mitzvot of your God that I command you today. The curse, if you don't obey or listen. On the surface, this seems like a simple restatement of the central message repeated all through Devarim. If you do good, you'll be blessed. If you do evil, you'll be cursed. This Deuteronomic covenant lies at the heart of the Torah's understanding of ethics. But commentator Nachama Leibovitz points out that these are not really two parallel ifs. Blessing if you listen, curse if you don't. Though most translations hide that. The Torah uses two different words. It reads, Et habracha asher tishmeu, v'ha klala, im lo tishmeu. That is the blessing because you listen. The curse if you do not. The commentator Rashi says, the curse is written in the conditional, the blessing in the declarative. That is, the blessing of God is definite. The curse, only a possibility. Leibowitz adds that God actually gives us a line of credit, a kind of mitzvah equity loan, and we can borrow blessings on the speculation that we will likely later do mitzvot. It's a good deal for us, if not always for God, but it's a comforting thought. We are given blessings on the likelihood that we will do mitzvot. God rewards us and then hopes, prays, that we act ethically. As we approach the season of tshuva, the time of return, our portion of Re'eh gives added hope that God will always provide us the benefit of the doubt, that God is in fact extending us credit in advance to help us with our return to being our best selves. All we need to do is take advantage of the opportunity. May that be our choice, to embrace holiness and goodness in the coming month of Elul and in the days of return that follow. Our guest this morning, Yuval David, will appear in the much-anticipated upcoming new miniseries based on Philip Roth's great novel, The Plot Against America. He's a prominent Israeli-American actor, but also a committed and accomplished worker for social justice. Find out how he balances it all when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Israeli President Reuven Rivlin called U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi last week to stress Israel's relationship with the United States is not dependent on one political party. Rivlin said that he placed the call against the backdrop of recent events. He was referring to the statement by President Donald Trump, in which the Republican said at a news conference last week in the Oval Office, "I think any Jewish people that vote for a Democrat, I think it shows either a total lack of knowledge or great disloyalty." Rivlin thanked Pelosi, a Democrat, for her unqualified commitment to U.S.-Israel relations and for being a true friend. The relationship between the State of Israel and the United States is a link between peoples, which relies on historical ties, deep and strong friendships, and shared values that are not dependent on the relationship with one particular party, he said. Rivlin also quoted John F. Kennedy, of course a Democrat, who said that friendship with Israel is not a partisan matter, it is a national commitment. The Israeli president said his country should remain above political disputes and make every effort to ensure that support for Israel does not become a political issue, adding that the elections we hold give voice to the will of our citizens. Venezuela's opposition leader appointed a diplomatic envoy to Israel, which has joined 50 other nations in recognizing him as the country's legitimate president. Juan Guaido, the head of the Venezuelan Congress, named Rabbi Pinchas Brenner as a diplomat in Jerusalem. Brenner, Rabbi Emeritus of the Union Israelita de Caracas Synagogue, and a former chief Ashkenazic rabbi of Venezuela, was approved for the position in a unanimous vote by the Venezuelan Congress last week, although he will serve in a de facto diplomatic role His designation to the Israeli government will be diplomatic envoy. This appointment is part of the movement launched by the Venezuelan Congress against Nicolas Maduro back in January, following his victory in an election that Guaido, the United States, the European Union, and other world leaders maintain was fraudulent. Guaido has already appointed diplomatic envoys to several European nations, the United Kingdom, Germany, and France, and others, as well as ambassadors to many countries in the Americas, including the U.S., Canada, and Brazil. In July, Morocco became the first African nation to welcome a special envoy of Guaido. Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu recognized the new leadership in Venezuela in January. Guaido thanked Netanyahu, comparing the political upheaval in Venezuela with the end of the Holocaust. Former Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez broke off diplomatic relations with Israel back in 2009 during its three-week military operation that year in Gaza. Venezuela is home to a fast-shrinking 6,000-member Jewish community. Most Jews there have fled to the U.S., Israel, or elsewhere. In other news, police arrested a suspect in the shooting of an elderly man outside the synagogue in Miami, Florida. Miami-Dade police took Carlence St. Louis, 30 years old, into custody a day after he filled out a report with a nearby police department claiming a firearm had been stolen from his black Chevy Impala, the car that police were seeking in the synagogue shooting. Bullets from a loaded magazine in the car matched bullet casings from the attack. Police did not identify a motive or say if charges against St. Louis will include a hate crime. The victim in the July 28th attack, Yosef Lifshitz, 68 years old, was shot six times in the legs as he stood outside the Young Israel of Greater Miami waiting for prayer to begin. Lifshitz required surgery. He is still recovering. St. Louis was charged with attempted felony murder, discharging a weapon from a car, and aggravated battery on a person over 65. He perhaps also should be charged with stupidness. He'd filed his report about the stolen firearms earlier in the week with the Hallandale Beach Police Department, which led to him being arrested. Miami-Dade State Attorney Catherine Fernandez-Rundle says the local hate crimes unit is investigating. Acts of violence will not be tolerated in our community, particularly in sacred places of worship, she said, adding that she will vigorously prosecute the case. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Around the World. We welcome back the Two Jewish, our guest this morning. Yuval David is an actor, humanitarian, and filmmaker. Israeli-American, what do you say? Israeli or American?
I say both. I'm an Israeli-American, and I'm an American-Israeli. I guess it depends on where I am. Shani Baritz, and Yomer Shani Amerikai v'Israeli, and when I'm in America, I say I'm an Israeli-American.
Betach Sheken. You are the grandson of survivors, the son of, I guess chalutzim really be the correct term, agricultural pioneers. You've done activist work for the Jewish National Fund, but for a variety of other causes. Tell us how you started. You mentioned it's been integrated in your life as part of your tikkun olam, as part of your Jewish mission from the beginning. How did you initially start to use your prominence for that effect? What causes did you start with, and how do you choose what you do?
Well, I am, like you said, I am proud to be the grandson of amazing grandparents. My grandparents are Holocaust survivors and recognized heroes of the war with documentaries about them. And summers in Israel and winters in Israel, when I would mostly be in Israel, I remember not being able to walk more than a few steps in public with my grandparents before somebody would stop us and tell me who my grandparents are and thanking my grandparents basically for their lives. So I got used to understanding that my grandparents are these great people who've done wonderful things helping others. And in the United States, even as a youth, I was invited to panel discussions to discuss the Holocaust, to discuss the Shoah, and to discuss how it's affected our people, especially in intergenerational dialogues as a third generation survivor, as we refer to it. So that started very early on. And also, my grandfather and I actually used to dumpster dive. Whenever we would see things that people would throw away that could be fixed or repaired, we would gather up people's trash, basically. If it was broken furniture, broken clocks or watches, clothing that people would throw away, we would fix it up as much as we could, if it was possible, and we would bring it to the needy. I think that was very much came from my grandparents' background and what they suffered in Poland, especially under the hands of the Nazis, but before that, and just recognizing that one person's trash can be another person's treasure. I was raised knowing that when my grandmother was moved into the Krakow ghetto, she created a hole in the wall and took her father's coat and sewed all kinds of pockets into it. And whatever she found that she could possibly sell or trade for food, she would. And so it was just a common practice for me to know that things that some people are throwing away could be used for others. Now, that also led to our going to stores, or especially bakeries and restaurants and grocery stores at the end of the day, and collecting whatever foods had to get thrown out because they weren't sold. And in Israel at the time, I don't remember them ever having, you know, the day-old baskets like we see at grocery stores here in the U.S. And we would collect this, and we would go to areas where new immigrants were moving to, or going into areas where people were underprivileged or living under the poverty line, and we would give them the stuff that was perfectly okay. It just happened to be the end of the day at these bakeries. And I was just raised with helping others. I went to the Charles E. Smith Jewish Day School in outside of Washington, D.C., and across the street was the Hebrew Home, a assisted living facility and senior living facility. And my volunteerism continued there as well, where I would go and visit people who didn't have family to go and visit them, or whose families lived very far away. And I ended up making really amazing friends who, while they were significantly older than me at the time, they were these people who just deserved that attention. So I started doing things for others from as early as I can remember. And as my own career flourished, I became a professional actor when I was in high school, acting in theater and then doing voiceovers for National Geographic, the Learning Channel, the Discovery Channel. Eventually that took me out to New York, and that took me to LA, and then back to New York, and then back and forth between New York and LA. So the concept of Tikkun Olam has always been ever present in my life. But as my professional platform grew, my opportunities to help others grew. And as my reach of helping others, of trying this world a better place, extended and grew, my professional career grew as well. So I kind of see it all as hand in hand.
You have a web series, Better World, and you're committed to trying to improve the world in a lot of different ways. Tell us how that evolved and what's involved in that.
Well, whenever I have a free moment, I try to create content. I live by a lot of mantras, and one of them is to constantly create content, or consistently create content. I also like the alliteration there. But so basically, it's whenever I have a chance to create something, I do. And according to the laws of New York City, you can film in public as long as your camera is exposed and you don't need to get permits for doing so, unless you put a tripod down on the ground. So I understood the laws. I said, okay, I can put a monopod down on the ground, for to hold up the camera, or it can be handheld or with gimbals. I won't go into all the technical stuff.
Sure.
But I said, okay, all of a sudden I have, you know, these 2 days where I'm not filming on set for a television show or a movie. Let me create some content with my crew. And one of the things is I really love collaborating. Maybe that comes from my theater background, but really looking at things as our project, doing things with others who love that collaborative spirit, thinking outside the box, or maybe not even thinking that there's a box. And so that's how I create content regularly. It started with multiple different short films or experimental films, and then into web series. So where did Better World come from? It came from that same process of saying, okay, I have 4 days of free time. I want to do something that pertains to making this world a better place. And that's kind of how that started.
I was thinking, you know, you mentioned understanding how to take something that doesn't mean anything to other people, you know, mentioned dumpster diving with your grandfather, collecting old bread at the end of the day, seeing value where there wasn't, because Holocaust survivors always did that. I think that was a great training to be a starving actor, actually, in some ways. But what that does certainly is create a consciousness of those who don't have as much, of those and who are on the margins of society. You've been an advocate for LGBTQ causes and such as well. How does that interact with your Israeli identity?
Well, you mentioned those who are on the margins of society. Who better than the Jewish people, or what narrative of a people represents marginalization better than the Jewish history? On the other hand, you know, not that we need to compare one people to another, but looking throughout the course of Jewish history, which of course includes Israel and Israeli history, the land and the people are and the faith are all tied together. It's a story of a marginalized people. I just finished editing this new documentary that I'm producing all about the indigenous people of Israel, talking about how amazing it is that we're still here, that this Am Yisrael Chai is not just an expression, it's a fact, it's a truth, when we have faced so many struggles, we have faced so much persecution, and we're still here, and we still struggle. And today, we're facing this horrible rise of anti-Semitism, because anti-Semitism has never disappeared, it's never gone away, it's been ever present. But now it's either easier for anti-Semitic people to express their beliefs in a more open way. So focusing on those who are marginalized comes from just the understanding of my people, of my family's history, of our people, of our family history. And if I'm taking care of myself, if I'm taking care of my community, if I'm taking care of my family, my people, my nation, I also have to take care of others. It's like the Jewish and Zionist principle to be or lagoim vekechol lagoim, to be a light unto other nations and to be like other nations.
Yeah, that because difficult balance.
It's a difficult balance, but it goes hand in hand. We're not alone in this world. So if we're helping ourselves, we have to help others. And it's not only because of the, you know, do unto others as you would like to be done to you. It's just do unto others what is right.
So I'm going to ask maybe a little bit of a challenging question. So often Israel is demonized by people who otherwise would be great allies in working on all kinds of causes. Have you experienced this? Do you find resistance to the work that you do because of that?
Sadly, my answer is yes. Lately, I've been struggling with the fact that I've been getting more hate messages across social media and in comments to all of my video content, even if it doesn't have anything to do with Judaism or Israel or the Jewish people or LGBTQ causes or whatever it might be. On a daily basis lately, I've been getting some pretty extreme comments and threats that are coming both from white supremacist neo-Nazis and from the far left anti-Israel, anti-Zionist, anti-Semitic people. And I'm also getting them from Muslim people who demonize Israel. So it's been really challenging, especially when my approach to all of my content, which goes along with my advocacy work and my public speaking and the content that I create with a focus on making this world a better place, I have a concept of the us we instead of the us them, to say that this is all about us. We're in this together. Everybody is just as important and everybody is just as unique and special, but we're also all ultimately the same. So even though I'm encountering people who are trying to combat me with hate and negativity, my response is always with love and appreciation and positivity.
Yuval, one more acting question. I feel like I could talk a great deal longer, but we're running out of time. And as a filmmaker, you know time matters. Who's your favorite collaborator you had the opportunity to work with at this point?
Oh, don't make me say that, because then I'll get in trouble if I say that one person is my favorite.
Okay, one of your favorite collaborators. Let's do it that way.
Well, I just got to be directed by the amazing and the great Nikki Spiro, who directed me in The Plot Against America. She is an absolutely outstanding powerhouse of a director. And she also creates the safe space on set where she lets her actors flourish. So I really am super impressed by her.
Where can people go to find out more about you? By the way, I can't wait to see Plot Against America, one of my favorite novels ever.
It's a great novel. You'll be able
I always wondered, you'll be seeing it next year. Next year, yeah. I was wondering when they would make a movie out of it. It turns out it's a TV series, but that's the best stuff now. Where can people go to find out more about you and your work?
Well, I'm very findable across all social media, on YouTube at Yuval David, on Instagram at Yuval_David_. Apparently there, Yuval David was already taken. Facebook, Yuval David. So it's pretty easy to find me. But I do also want to say I have this new series called One Actor Short, where I go out onto the streets of New York City and I invite random strangers to play a part in a short film. In under 10 minutes, I improvise with them, I guide them and direct them through the improv, and I give people the chance to be in a movie. So it kind of goes along with the element of tikkun olam, or of making people feel special, is everybody is just as special and interesting to be on camera. That goes hand in hand with all of the social action.
Fantastic.
And that can be found on my YouTube channel.
I'm going to be in New York the last week of August. Maybe you're one actor short, although I don't think I'd be a random person anymore.
There are many people who've asked about that, who want to be a random person.
Hey, I
want
to be the random
to be a random person. Yeah. But I'd be glad to meet you in New York when you're here.
Thanks, Yuval. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun. A place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol. The best games in town. Amazing dining and top flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball. Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaki Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday on Too Jewish. Our guest will be Margot Singer, award-winning author of the book Underground Fugue. Our playout this morning comes from the wildly popular Israeli Netflix show Shtisel, about ultra-Orthodox Jews and the vagaries of their attempts to find love. My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace. Thank you.
sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.